are.
Susan's here too. Thank you, Susan.
My daughter has some homework assignments due, and I was not going to get home in time, so I'm having people in the audience help me.
Okay, how's that going for you?
It's good.
All right, we probably shouldn't be announcing that.
She has to give a speech on teacher compensation, so I'm asking people to give all feedback right on that. I'll send you an email, Amanda.
Yeah, I'm not last, Brett.
Oh, no. I have a present for you, though.
I know.
I would like to take a moment this evening to thank the choir from Kendrick Lakes Elementary School and their director, Daniel Bayert, for the wonderful performance this evening. If you were here and you didn't get the Christmas spirit, I'd be surprised, because they were something. That was a lot of fun. I want to mention that Board Director Brad Rupert will be joining us via speakerphone for this meeting. I believe that Mr. Rupert is online and connected, and so I'm going to ask, Mr. Rupert, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you just fine. Thank you.
Perfect. And you're coming through here loud and clear. Let's call our study session to order for December 7th, 2017. The time is 5:10 p.m. We're going to start this evening with comprehensive annual financial report. The Board of Education monitors the district-wide financial condition as outlined in Board Executive Limitation Policy EL6, Financial Administration, and EL5, Financial Planning and Budgeting. Colorado Revised Statute requires the district to prepare a comprehensive audited financial report that is delivered to the Board of Education. The final report consists of financial information prepared by the district and audited by an independent firm, which indicates the financial status of the district at the end of the reporting period, June 30, 2017. The comprehensive annual financial report is a starting point for our annual budget preparation process, which we will be beginning soon. Dr. Glass, do you have anything that you would like to add before we turn it over to Ms. Askelson?
No, just compliments to the team that you'll hear from. I've been briefed on the things that they've been working on, and pleased to report to you that the district's in sound financial shape, but they'll tell you more about that. Thank you.
Okay. And Ms. Askelson, I'm going to turn the floor over to you and ask if you would provide introductions or have your team introduce themselves, either way you want to do it.
Thank you. Good evening. We're glad to be here and present the Comprehensive Financial Report for 2017. This presentation tonight will be predominantly from the auditors, our external auditors from Clifton Larson Allen. So I'm going to go ahead and let everyone do introductions and they'll get started.
Paul Niedermuller, principal with Clifton Larson Allen.
Haley Cox, manager, Clifton Larson Allen.
And I'm Stephanie Corvo, finance director at Jeffco.
And with that, let's begin.
Well, thank you very much, and good evening, members of the Board of Education. Again, Paul Niedermuller with Clifton Larson Allen. And we just want to kind of give the board up to date in terms of the process we have gone through, as well as the result and how we've reported out. Earlier this week, we met with both the Audit Committee and the Financial Oversight Committee to discuss in more detail the results of the financial information. Tonight, we are going to bring the results to you, as well as address any questions that you may have as your role as within the Board of Education. I do want to recognize the importance of we work for the board. We are the independent auditors hired by the Board of Education. We take that role very seriously, and this is a very important aspect of our reporting, is to understand the financial condition as well as the role of you as the Board of Education. One of the things that we discussed then as we go through the slide presentation is the importance of internal controls. And internal controls is something that is set forth by the Board of Education through the use of management. And one of the things that we focus on a lot in relation to the audit process is those activities, those things that are making sure that you're following the policies and procedures that have been set forth, as well as the continual monitoring of those policies and procedures. Those are more of a retrospective look back. Those are what we call more of detective control. So if something went wrong, we would say, hey, there's some issues here. But we wanted to make sure that you understood the importance as a Board of Education, as well as through management, of the three other buckets of internal controls, or the three other prongs surrounding those. And that would be the control environment and setting the tone. And again, from a Board of Education standpoint, setting the proper tone at the top of the organization to make sure that people understand the clear direction and vision surrounding the organization, as well as the risk assessments. This world is ever-changing, and there's a constant change related to risk associated with financial and other types of risk. And an example of that that we discussed with the FOC as well as the audit committee is the vulnerability with cybersecurity and other things. From an audit perspective, a lot of times from the past, the risk was always within the organization of people, you know, taking money or people beating the system because they had the internal knowledge. Now that risk has kind of transpired to outside of the organization and potential hacks within your security and the IT with the information technology has been a forefront of over the last decade. And then the final information, again, from your role and as well as management, is the importance of information and communication, that transparency surrounding the organization, making sure that everybody understands what those roles and procedures are and how that's conveyed to the members of your organization so they can execute on the direction of management as well as the Board of Education. So we went into a lot more detail, but I just want everybody to understand the stage as an audit and kind of the risk that are out there within the public, as we talked about, from a vulnerability of IT security. That is something that is hitting a lot of governmental agencies as well as all the private businesses, and something that the Board of Education should be aware of. You know, there's, again, from a disclosure standpoint, there's a lot of things that are happening within the Governmental Accounting Standards Board. We went into much more detail with those other two organizations, as I mentioned, but the one that's most relevant that will be impacting the district in this current fiscal year is the other post-employment benefits, and that is your membership within the Healthcare Trust Fund of Colorado Para. And so as you are aware with the pension standards, that liability associated with your proportionate share will be required to be reflected on your financial statements beginning the year ended June 30, 2018. There are also other accounting standards that will have an impact and have a financial disclosure as well as presentation up in the coming year. So if you thought the governmental was static and there was no new changes, I'm here to tell you that's the absolutely contrary. So again, management is aware of all these, but we just wanted to bring it to your attention in a brevity related to the changes that are occurring within the accounting standards world. Also, just for your information, again, that we talked about risk assessment and the constant change that's happening within the financial environment, and we wanted to bring to your attention a couple things surrounding the potential for tax reform that is being proposed at the federal legislative area could have an impact, and the proposal of impact on public schools as well as local government finance. And in particular, the lack of ability to do advanced refundings into the future, as well as some state and local tax deductions and other things that have an impact on public school and financing and potential funding surrounding that reform. The other item, at the statewide level, as you are aware, there has been proposals made by Colorado Para as well as the governor surrounding the funding of the pension system. And those will be closely monitored by the district, as the impact of those could have ramifications in the short-term future surrounding the contributions that are required to be made either at the employee level or at the employer level. Again, that's something just on the radar, but it's something that will have an impact as we move forward for the funding changes surrounding Colorado Para. And again, as you all are aware, and again, keep my comments very brief, the state budget is something that's a huge impact to the funding, and that was something that will be on the radar of the School of Education Board. So I kind of gave you the macro trends surrounding our process, and I just wanted you to be aware that it's ever-changing. It's not just retroactive reporting, but just keeping in mind as we go through the financial results. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to Haley to discuss some of the results, but I did want to end my presentation or my portion on a positive note. I wanted to recognize the district receiving an unmodified opinion and, again, translation, a clean opinion in all material respects. So within the financial statements as presented and shown on page 13, we did issue a clean opinion. So again, congratulations for the district and your oversight as Board of Education for that positive result for the year ended June 30, 2017.
Thank you, Paul. And I'm going to go over briefly the scope of our engagement. We've been engaged by the Board of Education to opine over your financial statements, and with that includes the single audit report as well. So this year we tested Title I as a major program for the district. We are also engaged to report on any findings or question costs. And just to bring to your attention, there were two significant deficiencies identified through the audit process. At the back of the CAFR, you will see the single audit report, and you can see in more detail the details surrounding those two deficiencies. There is an addition to the single audit report, and that's the corrective action plan. That is actually a document that's put together by management and their accountability for those deficiencies and how they plan to correct them. As you can see from our presentation, there are several reports that we actually issue. I'll let you read those at your leisure. There are also required communication from us to you and governance. We went through them in detail with the FOC and the audit committee earlier this week. And just to give you kind of an update from that, there are various communications that we have between us and management as collaboration throughout the audit process, and there was nothing that came to our attention during those conversations that we need to discuss further today. And I'll give it back to Paul to go through financial results.
And again, from a go-forward basis, anytime you have any type of finding, the one thing that's most relevant is the importance of addressing that. And the history and from previous years, there were no findings and they were all been addressed. So we expect the same type of result as you move forward. But again, that's something that's very important as your role as Board of Education is making sure that those findings do get addressed and are not repeated on an annual basis. I am not going to go over the financial information, but we would be happy to address any questions at the conclusion of our presentation because of the depth that we went over into the other two committees. We did want to bring to your attention, these are lifted from each of the last 10 years' comprehensive annual financial reports, and this first graph that you see within your screen shows your fund balance, and this is the fund balance of the general fund over the past 10 years. As you're aware, the unassigned component fund balance is those that don't have any strings attached to that, and you will see that is highlighted in green as well as relates to the total fund balance surrounding the last 10 years. Now, reserves or fund balance are very dependent on what the right amount is and based upon the total outgo. And this graphic displays the total outgo of the district surrounding the general fund compared to the unassigned reserves or the unassigned fund balance at the end of the year from a trend standpoint, looking from 2008 through 2017. And then finally, from a trend from the financial statements, we have a graphic with the net position, and this shows the impact of GASB Statement 68 on the pension. You will see in fiscal year 2015 that turned the unrestricted net position to a negative, and that trend has continued through fiscal year 2017 as demonstrated on this slide. And then finally, the investments within capital assets versus depreciation. And the reason we think this is relevant, depreciation is the value of the asset, the historical cost of that asset over the life of that asset, and it recognizes on an annual basis. And of course, in order to keep your property, plant, and equipment in the same type of condition, you're required to invest at least over that depreciation amount. And this kind of shows you the amount that was invested back into your infrastructure, your property, plant, and equipment over the past 10 years compared to that depreciation expense as we just outlined. So you'll see the dip in those investments that were made starting in fiscal year 2011 through fiscal year 2015 with the spike as a result of the bond program, and then again representing 2017 comparison of additions versus depreciation. At this point, we would be happy to address any specific questions that you all have.
May I just clarify that the net position that we see shifting there, you mentioned GASB 68, meaning that we're reflecting the para, help me with the language, the future obligation that we carry with related to para. The change in this most recent year, is that due to para's changed assumptions around things like life expectancy rates?
There's maybe a couple items. It's a lot more complicated than just maybe one singular item, but the two large ones are change in mortality. People are living longer, and those tables are taken into consideration as the new study was conducted, as well as the guidance that currently is outstanding in terms of what the funding level is going to be from an employer and employee is taken into consideration. And as you see within your financial statements, as of 2041, that won't be sufficient to meet all the obligations. And so the discount rate or the investment rate of return was reduced by 2%. So those two factors had the largest significance in terms of the doubling of the para liability as it relates to Jeffco Public Schools. Excellent.
Anything else?
Mr. President, if you would turn with me to page 32, you'll see just to the question, if you have that information in front of you on the comprehensive annual financial report, and you'll see the net pension liability or your proportionate share of Colorado Para is at $3.1 billion. And if from a historical standpoint or the last several years, if you look at page 77, and the trend of that liability, again, from 2013, that liability was $1.4 billion. And the most recent year, it was $3.1 billion. So that kind of shows the impacts of those mortality as well as the investment rate of return and the returns that had been garnered over the last four fiscal years.
Okay. Thank you.
I was just wondering, in conclusion, I know that you work in the audit committee the other day. You said you work with several districts, and I was wondering if you had any opinions on anything that we could be doing or any resources or anything additional that we could be doing to help our process.
Well, first of all, if there's anything that we thought would warrant the attention of the Board of Education, we would have communicated that within our report. Mm-hmm. So we're very happy to report that there were two minor items that we've listed within this financial statements. In terms of best practices, you know, we believe that the district is applying those, and there's nothing that we thought was relevant to our communication to you as members of the Board of Education.
Okay. That's good to know. Thank you.
Additionally, I believe that you, our organization was once again rewarded or acknowledged with the award for. Can you tell us a little bit more, Ms. Askelson, about, I believe this is the 34th year that Jeffco School District has been a recipient of this award. Can you speak to that?
Yes, it's the Government Finance Officers Association Certificate of Excellence, and I do believe we're on the 34th or so consecutive year. And we certainly don't want to be at the helm and breaking that cycle. 34. And it's a pretty exhaustive checklist that you do as you prepare this report. And every year we get some comments back by reviewers of financial reports. And we respond to those comments. So we're constantly improving and fine-tuning, but it's a really good process for us to go through.
And I just want to say I think it's important that we celebrate our successes. I say that to you sincerely. If we're doing something well and we're recognized for that, then let's celebrate that. And let's keep doing it. I mean, we all understand that component, too. I think the most important, are there other questions I should ask that? I think the most important component of this for me was that as auditors, you do work for us, and that gives me a certain comfort level that's part of being in this position. And I really do value and appreciate a clean opinion on our financial situation right now. And so thank you for the work you do. Thanks for the reassurance that it gives us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we'll move to item 2.02 on our study session agenda. The board received information on entrepreneurial efforts for innovative schools at the November 16 and December 1 study sessions. Staff is proposing to create an innovation fund using general fund reserves for the current year. Tonight's presentation will include background and information on objectives, benefits, timeline, and funding options prior to the staff's request for formal action on the establishment of an innovation fund in January. Dr. Glass, is there anything you'd like to add to this topic?
Yes, as you mentioned, the board heard about this previously in the conversations around the entrepreneurial endeavors a couple of weeks ago. We're now bringing this to you to consider as a budgetary item because we need resources to make the innovation fund go. The purpose of it really is to spur and support innovation across the whole organization or democratize innovation so that anyone in Jeffco Public Schools potentially could bring forward an innovative idea that would be vetted and considered by a panel using an established rubric. And then if we felt like it was an idea with merit, it would be supported with these dollars. The board should be aware that we're asking for this for this current year. It might create an expectation that you continue it going forward, so that's something to consider as you think about standing this up. So I'll let the team talk about it a little more, but that's my introduction.
All right. And Mr. McDermott, are you starting this presentation? I'm assuming so.
Yes, Mr. President.
Welcome, Mr. Tom McDermott and Ms. Askelson again. Glad to have both of you. Please begin.
Great. Thank you. So as was mentioned, the idea for the Jeffco Innovation Acceleration Fund was discussed briefly during the November 16th Board of Education meeting and then again at CASB on December 1st. And we wanted to just provide some additional information and offer the opportunity to answer any questions that the Board of Education may have on the Jeffco Innovation Acceleration Fund. So the Jeffco Innovation Acceleration Fund, it's an effort to capitalize on the great ideas and the entrepreneurial spirit that exists in Jeffco. We know that Jeffco educators have great and innovative ideas all the time. This fund would allow for schools, educators, or any Jeffco Public Schools employee to apply for startup funding and go through an application process that to articulate their idea, the desired impact that their idea would have on the student learning experience, the goals and outcomes the innovation seeks to produce. The funding would be would support startup costs for the innovation, which would then need to be sustained through the SBB model. The process, the application process and the support structures would seek to facilitate what author Jim Collins refers to as empirical creativity in his book, Great by Choice. So Collins describes how the highest performers across all industries really focus their innovations on strategic efforts rather than chasing shiny objects or alluring diversions. This fund would seek to systemically foster this type of empirical creativity through aligning innovations to learning, conditions for learning, and readiness for learning strategies and tactics that are articulated in the Jeffco Generations document. So through this fund and the processes and supports, as a system and as a community, we believe we would better be able to capitalize on the enormous amount of talent and great ideas that exist here in Jeffco, and as well as build an infrastructure as a system to support and encourage thoughtful innovation that aligns with learning, conditions for learning, and readiness for learning. So as Dr. Glass mentioned, this request would be for the current school year. So to that question of why now. As we heard during the November 16th Board of Education meeting, many educators have already embraced the proposed organizational value of an entrepreneurial spirit and have brought many exciting ideas forward. Each of the ideas that we heard during that meeting would go through the JEFCO Innovation Acceleration Fund process, such as the dual language programming, expeditionary learning were some of the examples that we heard on the 16th. Additionally, we believe that implementing the structure and process would support strong and aligned innovations that could impact student learning experiences immediately in this year. So with that, I'm happy to open it up to any questions that the board may have on the JEFCO Innovation Acceleration Fund.
Okay. Have you thought about process and procedures and guidelines? Are those either being developed rapidly or at least in process, I think?
Yes. So we have a draft that is in draft form, and I did have the opportunity to take that draft in front of the principal advisory committee and get input from our principals who on the process, the application, the rubric, some of the supporting documents that we currently have in draft form to try to incorporate their feedback into our supports and our process.
The tail end of process, I'm sure, is oversight. Well, all throughout, I would say. Do you have an idea of what that would look like?
We have some ideas on process currently, where it would be an application, which has an accompanying rubric, and then our current thinking is that applications that meet a certain criteria on that rubric would then be invited to pitch their idea to a committee. And then that committee would make a determination or a recommendation as to where funding would be allocated and how much. And then I think the point that you're raising about ongoing supports for implementation and oversight, that's something that we will certainly need to be thinking about and continuing to support throughout, rather than just allocating dollars and hoping.
If I may add to that, one of the things that we've considered with this, we're not looking at it for this current fiscal year, is if we decide that this is going to be kind of an institutional element that's present in JEFCO schools and available for staff to apply for, we really need some kind of innovation officer or someone to oversee this, to encourage and support the applications and bringing forward of ideas, to manage the process and vetting of those ideas, to ensure that any funds that go out are actually expended and something happens with it, to support the implementation, to evaluate the outcomes from the innovations and determine if we would like to scale them. So that role currently doesn't exist in the organization, but we might want to consider it as something to support this effort.
I had two questions. This is for any stakeholder or any school. How broad is the stakeholder, just in terms of access to this fund through presenting ideas?
Our current thinking is that any JEFCO public school employee who could articulate how their innovation would have a positive impact on the student learning experience would be open to apply for this. And the application materials and rubric do make it clear that our priority in this fund is having a positive impact on student learning experience. So that's really the lens of that we're trying to facilitate, rather than identifying teachers or principals.
Okay. And then the second question was about sustainability through SBB. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. So our current thinking is that awards would be given annually. So, and getting an award 1 year does not necessarily mean that it would be awarded in the following year. There would need to be a demonstration that implementation progress is happening for a following year, and that the plan would be that for no more than 3 years would be would be funded through the JEFCO Innovation Acceleration Fund, that the schools in their original application as well would need to articulate how, after a maximum of 3 years, will this program be sustained through SBB.
To piggyback off of Susan's question, if it is not a teacher or a principal applying for this, and it's somebody in this building, would they be partnering with the school? So, or could it be a researchy type of a ask?
It's a good question. I think it's articulated in our current draft of the application that we encourage partnerships with schools and other organizations. So I would imagine that anything that we're coming from this building, there needs to be a connection made to how is this going to positively impact the student learning experience. I think there are other ways to do that than necessarily just through teachers or school leaders, but they need to make clear how their innovation will impact the student learning experience. So through schools will certainly be the majority, I believe.
Okay, and then another question. The committee that you spoke about, will that be a diverse group of people? Are you thinking community members, staff, a board member? How are you, have you thought about how you're gonna configure that, or?
Haven't yet considered who the stakeholders would be, but I think what you're articulating is aligned with what I think would be a strong committee of different representatives and different stakeholders.
I do have
so more directly to answer, we would want it to be a diverse group of JEFCO public schools employees and community members who would be able to evaluate, is this something that we want to put our money behind?
So I'm hearing an implication regarding sustainability that right now we're discussing potentially funding it this school year through reserves. But we should, as a board, keep in mind that there's an expectation or a hope that the process will prove fruitful for student engagement and furthering that kind of those entrepreneurial or innovative efforts with an expectation that it would probably live on in future budgets as a $1 million-ish expenditure initially. I do think sustainability is top of my mind, partly because we've made efforts in the past with one-time dollars and just in recent school visits. I hear how positively impacted, for example, our hard-to-serve dollars were a couple years ago. Certainly seen some fruit in several schools that have improved their school performance framework by one or two levels, but the staffing levels since that time have not been maintained because those were one-time dollars. So for me, this is an implication regarding a decision related to current budget, but we need to be mindful as a board what that would mean for the spring cycle and future budget.
So the sustainability of these innovations is really important, but they are innovations and we expect some of them are going to fail. So part of the value of this is that you have a relatively small amount of money in the district's entire general fund that you put toward this to really establish micro grants through the organization. And you try some things, and if after a year, 2 years, 3 years, we don't get results, it doesn't go into a school's SBB and start sapping those resources over the long term. So it's a small experiment, and $1 million is a lot of money, but in the grand scheme of JEFCO's entire budget, it's a minuscule amount to spur innovation across the organization.
And in terms of a concept, then people are bringing ideas, the committee is addressing the ideas, how many can we do based upon the cost of each of those? Is it one, is it multiple? And then monitoring that over that time period for sustainability. Some may be successful, some may not, and we're continuing to evaluate each year new options or new opportunities as well. Okay.
Yes, and as Mr. McDermott said, we'd be evaluating any ongoing grants to determine, or innovation fund grants to determine, were they being implemented and did we have early signs of success to determine whether or not we continued it or not. So there would be kind of a rolling process where we'd evaluate new applications and ongoing applications.
Have you taken a look at any expired grants that may have proved to be very successful in some of the schools that we might consider taking a look at, or are you just looking for something totally new and out there and, you know, wow, we've never tried this before and this sounds really awesome?
I think we don't really know. So we've heard a lot of ideas bubble up through the organization about, well, what about this? I've gotten some emails, Tom's gotten some emails about, hey, would you fund this? And we've said, slow down. We need to stand up a process around this first. But we're hoping that, we believe that there's a lot of creativity and a lot of innovative ideas that are present in our schools and really throughout the whole organization. And so we're going to kind of see what happens with this. One of the things with this is we're not obligated to spend it. So if we don't get $1 million worth of applications, or we decide there aren't $1 million worth of ideas that we feel are worthy of funding, we don't spend the money, and it just goes right back into the general fund. So it's not you're not necessarily approving the expenditure when we bring it back to you for approval. You're simply approving the resources are available if valuable ideas percolate up.
If you don't mind, I could interject a little bit here. First, I think it's important that we find a formal process to spur innovation in the district. So I like the idea. It is important that we have clear goals and we have clear means of measuring those goals. And we want to be able to, if something isn't successful, pull the plug quickly. Third, now is probably among the best times we're likely to ever have in the future to try something like this. We've been led to believe that this year's allocations from the state might not be as scary as it was, for example, last year. And so now might be the right time to try this. You know, in 2 years, there's no reason to think that we may not have another economic downturn that will impact the state's budget. Certainly all the other things going on will impact the state's budget. And so we may want to strike while the iron is hot, recognizing that when times get tough again, this may not measure up to be one of our highest priorities. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't take the shot today.
Thank you, Mr. Rupert. It took me a couple of minutes to figure out whose voice had joined the boardroom.
I was hearing it too, Mr. President.
Frankly, Mr. Rupert, you confused me, but I figured it out about halfway through. Thank you for joining in. And I simply want to acknowledge to the audience that that is who was speaking. Other questions related to the Innovation Fund?
I've got a real quick question. I was wondering earlier, you know, we've talked a lot in the past about, hey, telling our stories and this school's doing something great, and how are we going to expand this? Would this include somebody trying to expand something really innovative that another school was doing 3 years ago? And if so, I think we got to be ready to answer it. Well, I've been doing this for 3 years and figured out how to fund it. Do we have something going on with expanding great ideas already? Is what I'm wondering.
Yeah, well, I think there's a variety of innovations, and part of an innovation can be a scaling or a replication. So we have to evaluate them when they come in, I think, against the rubric that Mr. McDermott has established. That's based on some resources from Denver's Imaginarium and the New Schools Venture Fund is where we got some of the ideas around how to construct this. We've also ran it by our principal advisory committee. So I think that should be our guidepost, is those two things of how it performs against that evaluation rubric and that empirical creativity element that Tom raised, as well as is it targeted toward the strategic direction of the organization? So then we're sort of open to whatever ideas come forward under those two conditions. And part of the fun of this is we don't really know what those will look like yet. So we're just kind of creating an environment where we hope those come forward.
Okay. Well, I do look forward to seeing the nuts and bolts of the process from very beginning to end, because I agree with Brad, it really needs to be buttoned up, and it sounds like really exciting things could be happening if we do have it buttoned up. So thanks for bringing this forward.
I I would actually say that I'm excited about the concept. Now, we talk monthly, I think, if not more often than that, about a process that I would generally call continuous improvement. How do we continually improve the education that we are providing for JEFCO students? But if we continue to do exactly the same things that we've been doing, then our only effort is to try to do those things better. And that becomes, you know, it's difficult to see the gains that you're making there. And I view this as an opportunity to get our organization to think about what could we do that would improve the quality of education that all children are receiving. And that's exciting. I frankly wish we had more money to invest in it, but we have to start where we can. And so I'd just like to say that. Are we ready to, okay, I think, do you have other comments? I can't tell, Ms. Askelson.
I was gonna step us through the reserves and the funding of this. Is my mic?
I don't think it's on.
So I was going to step us through really quick our reserve balances and the funding for this, since this would be a request coming forward probably in January to use supplemental reserves. So I have a four-year chart here, so you can see our history of unassigned, our TABOR, and just some other of the pieces of our fund balance through the last 4 years. And you can see the unassigned growth that we have. This is the same information, just in dollar amounts for you, and what we're looking at the end of fiscal year 17 is $76.5 million in unassigned. That's 12.29% of expenditures. So this piece of the presentation, you're gonna see tonight here on this part of the agenda where we're talking about the Innovation Fund, I put the same sheets on a later discussion we'll have about facilities, because it's the same information, same fund balance. So it's a little redundant, but I thought it was worth being on both pieces of topic. So you'll see that if we're at 76.5 and we use 1 million of that, it'll take our percent to expenditures at 11.74. It shifts it down a little bit. And then you'll see we'll discuss the other three pieces later tonight about what that does to our fund reserves. I just also wanted to let you know that we did bring this up at the ratings meetings that we had recently. Okay. So our ratings will reflect that they are aware that we were going to make this potential request in January. And if the rating agencies had any thoughts around that, I'm sure they'll communicate that. But I'm confident that we are still within the range of 8 to 16%.
Will you have that feedback from those rating agencies likely
it should be done
by
this
January?
Week. Okay, it'll be done this week. And one of the things for waiting till January, too, is we'll be halfway through the year at the end of December. I can take a look and see how we're doing on retirement and turnover, our last assumption that we have in place that we need to hit for the current year. And once everything's kind of in place, we'll be good to go.
I do want to ask surface one question. First of all, I think it's exciting to propose something that allows individuals and learning communities to envision something, to feel as though there's a process that might enable them to do new work or work that they've been dreaming of for a long time. I'm also really excited to know that it would happen within a framework of conversation, dialogue, strategic planning. I feel as though it creates a system of accountability to pair with that creativity, and I think that's benefits the process at all levels. The one line item in this chart that stands out to me that for me creates a question regarding sustainability over time is just noticing the shift in school carry forward numbers. We recognize that schools feel as though they need to take steps to plan over time for trade-offs and unexpected changes, but I also recognize that that's a significant amount of money that has been increasingly kind of reserved. Every school building is creating their own reserves account while we continue to work to utilize ours. So for me, I'm curious to know what conversations might happen or what steps might need to happen so that there can be a level of comfort with maybe not necessarily sustaining that level of increase over time?
Well, we had a lot of conversations around school carry forward. That's been a big topic. There was a questionnaire that we sent out to schools asking, you know, what are you keeping your carry forward for? We had a variety of responses, one-to-one devices, concerns about enrollment, some initiatives at the school. So all of the budget analysts that are assigned to schools are working closely with them to, one, see what their plan was, how they're covering it, and making sure they're comfortable what their carry forward is and how they're using it and the balance that'll be remaining. We have set out a 5% of discretionary funds benchmark form. That's one of the things we're gonna look at internally as well. Is that still a good benchmark, or do we think we need to adjust that? But I do believe it's too high at the end of last year, and I do think we'll see it go down with some of the enrollment adjustments, but we do want them to invest in their programs as well. So it's kind of a balanced piece about how much to keep and how much to spend, but we're working with them.
Can I ask what the reserves were in 08 and 09? Because I need perspective. I know that we were... I saw it on the CAFR. I just want to be reminded.
Thanks.
Was it 13%, if I remembered correctly?
Oh, gosh. I apologize. I don't think it's in this slide presentation.
Okay. Because I just want to acknowledge for this visual that...
Because we just went back to 14.
That the reason our reserves look a lot lower is because we had... There were so many cuts.
Right. So if you look at a long trend.
So really
history,
we're not stashing money away is what I'm saying.
Right. I just did a 4-year snapshot. But when you go back to 08, it was quite high.
Yes.
And then we went through the recession. And at one point, our lowest point in 2012, I want to say, we were at $3 million unassigned, which is... horrifying, right. Horrifying for how big we are.
From a financial point of view.
Yeah. So we have, since 2012, 13, 14, 15, and 16, we've built reserves. And,
yes.
And purposefully. That was one thing that the 2012 mill levy override helped us tremendously with, to get off of that dangerous cliff we were sitting on at $3 million unassigned. So we started putting the reserves in and have strategically built this. And now we're in with the range where GFOA recommends. And with some underspend that we've encountered the last couple years, it's we're still within that range to use some of this as one-time spend. Now, the $1 million request for an innovation fund kind of goes with, we'll probably be bringing that as a $1 million request for 18-19 ongoing then, because as a one-time piece, it mm-hmm. might not be able to support then everything we'd want to do. So okay. This is just kind of the precursor to get it started.
Great. Okay. Thanks.
But Ms. Askelson, you, in general, you would believe that we are within the range in our reserve fund, that we probably are not risking bond fund ratings and those kind of any serious repercussions.
I believe that's true.
Thank you. Anything else? Then I want to say, Mr. McDermott and Ms. Askelson, thank you, both of you, again for this presentation. I believe that we will be planning to take action on these items in January. Thank you. And now, board members, let's take a 10-minute break prior to beginning our regular board meeting this evening. That'll give us time to get audience people in for the various honors and recognitions that we're going to do this evening. Thank you.